to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kresge. Think Chris Kattan, think flamboyant. In a 9-year run on Saturday Night Live, Kattan created characters that stick in the mind today. Mango, the irresistible male exotic dancer. Mr. Peepers, the unruly lab monkey. And with Will Ferrell, the head-nodding dance club junkies, the Pataby Brothers. These days, Chris Kattan is 2 years into a new brand of comedy, stand-up, which brings him this weekend to Sanford & Sons Out at the Legends for a series of shows. Here he is with Will Ferrell in his role as Mango, the male exotic dancer.
Listen, I think I got just the guy for you. He caught his act at a wonderful little strip club called Beef Cape. It's a male strip club. I went there by mistake, long story, okay? But anyway, I just fell in love with him. Come on out here, Mango.
Sorry I'm late. I was just getting acupuncture on my hoo-ha.
Mango, yes? Mango, listen, mm-hmm. Listen. We don't have a lot of time, okay?
Okay.
Can you do this for me?
Yes.
Can you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Your hoo-ha, Chris Kattan. Welcome.
Thank
so good
you.
To have you. Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
What is your hoo-ha?
I think it's another word for your penis.
Yeah, okay. That clarifies that pretty well. Okay. Where did the idea for Mango, the male exotic dancer, come from?
That was a combination of an ex-girlfriend that was Russian, that was very manipulative, and my dog who was a Dalmatian. Her name was Winnie, and she would her behind would be facing me. And she'd turn around and look at me while her behind was facing me and look at me and give me a come hither look. But she was a dog, so. It's a combination of those kind of two. Kind of like come here, go away. Like, oh, what, you know, leave me alone. No, I don't want to be alone. You know, that mixed messages kind of thing.
You know, when you do one of those recurring characters on a show like Saturday Night Live, how quickly do you know if the thing is working well enough that it's going to become a recurring character?
You don't have any idea the first time, I don't think.
Yeah. Like, so who decides? I mean, who says you're coming back with that?
Well,
Chris?
Like, say, like, the Blink book would point out or something. You just know by knowing when everyone else knows. You just have a sense of it yourself. And SNL being smart and you know, sophisticated, and part of their talent is having something grow because the media loves it and watching it grow, and then eventually it becomes a franchise of some sort and possibly a movie, or
yeah,
and also people find their identities through it and da 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 da. So when the character finds itself, you know, reoccurring, it'll probably be by the second time, I would think, or the third time especially. You know, the second time you'll find out if it does work for sure. And if it's getting a great response, like stronger than the first time, then it's probably going to come back a third time. Then it's going to.
You know,
it's also. I'm sorry, but when the guest host starts requesting it, that's when you really know.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that helps a little bit.
Yeah, because that means you don't have to pitch the idea any longer. That means someone's asking for it, which means you don't have to ask for it to be in the show. You know.
So when you get one of those things going, like Mango, that's got to be a heck of a ride, isn't it? I mean, it's got to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was. I mean, when I got on SNL, I thought that was the point. Like, I thought that was the dream, to be like Mike Myers, where you have Coffee Talk, and you have Sprockets, and you have Wayne's World.
Yeah.
And when you have those, then you can do them again. And, like, you kind of plan your future. I mean, I always thought that way. I always thought 3 or 4 years ahead of myself, too, because I never wanted to, you know, get into a position of, great chance and luck and then just screw it up because I wasn't planning on anything or protecting myself. And I think having kind of character is like almost having stock, but you never know if they're going to work. So, but I turned out lucky. You know, I was in the Groundlings in Los Angeles, and that's
right.
A place that urges
right.
you how to create characters.
Where your father began,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah. He started in like 75, 76, and
right.
I'd hang out there as a kid, and I got to see him create characters along with like Paul Rubens, create Pee Wee Herman, and that character didn't do so well in the very beginning either.
Hmm.
He couldn't find his voice.
Huh.
He'd throw Tootsie Rolls to the kids in the audience, and that worked, but. He didn't have his. He had like a laugh that was like that, but it wasn't quite the, you know, the whole.
Oh.
It didn't come out. And then someone gave him the suit with the red tie, and then he got. Then he wrote a whole show with Phil Hartman, and then he did the show at the Roxy, and then it just took off. And that's actually when the Groundlings kind of fell apart. When one guy had a character that just took off like that, the whole kind of group fell apart.
So these characters need a little time to develop. You got to be patient here and sort of, if you see a kernel, you got to sort of work with it and let it grow a little bit, it sounds like you're saying.
Yeah. Yes. Well, it depends if it really needs to be thought out. Some characters really need a lot of thought and never make it further than one or two sketches, you know?
Yeah.
Or some characters are completely thought out, and you know what? They don't have much more to show because they're already thought out so much, and it's really not that original of a character, you know?
Yeah.
I think original, and I just think intuition is the most important thing, and honing it into something that becomes incredibly attractive and funny. Like, I just did this thing this morning on a TV show, and in the news is Ben Affleck wants to be Batman, apparently.
Yes, I saw that today, yeah.
So I just said, for the heck of it, I asked the interviewer to ask me, I said, ask me to do Ben Affleck as Batman.
Go ahead and do Ben Affleck as Batman.
And that was it. And like you laugh. Okay, so behind me are people laughing. And they can't see me. But everyone seemed to laugh at that. And that was not, I never created that. But that when I did that, it actually felt like I did that years ago. Or it felt like I've been doing that for a long time, like my famous Ben Affleck impression. Mm. I don't know why. It just feels like, it feels like that's been done before. Or it felt like I've done that before. But I haven't. I just did it today. I sound really like kind of corny talking about this. But it really has a sound to it that sounds like it's been around for a while. And I think that's the trick too with the great characters like you know, like the cheerleaders or Mary Catherine Gallagher. The first time you do those characters, you somehow think they've been around for a while. Like Austin Powers, something in you liked it so much at first, immediately. I think it's because it reminded you of things that are absent right now, probably, or things you obviously like. But there's a couple of things about Austin Powers you love. The genre, and you love the sex appeal, and you love the 60s, and you love Mike Myers, and the takes, and the, you know, but you don't realize how similar they are to other things. But yet it works perfectly to, you know, it's a very tricky thing. But anyway, that's what I thought was the goal to get on SNL, was to do those characters. So,
I mean, to what extent do your fellow cast members, to what extent does the legendary producer Lorne Michaels sort of look at you and say, that character's working, stay with it?
He trusts the cast to let them figure that out for
really?
A while. Yeah. He at some point will suggest doing that character. I mean, you definitely know when you get a call and he says, let's do a movie, that's for sure. But you don't...
That's a good day.
Yeah, it is. Well, it's also a good day. It's a good day, but you're also like, wow, this is going to be... I'm going to have to stretch the sketch into a movie, and I might be one of those people, and, you know... But
what do you mean you might be one of those people?
Because every SNL movie's criticized as being a sketch turned into a movie, which is not the case. It's that's only for, I think, some characters.
But your point is to take a sketch, and it's like...
Well,
taking...
it's more of a... This is a big assignment to be told that you're going to do... if you wanted to do a movie based on a character.
And it's a stretch. It is a stretch.
Yeah, well, it's an assignment. You have to write it, too.
You're taking a newspaper story and making it a book. I mean, it's the same...
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that
doesn't
necessarily mean it's meant to be. That doesn't mean it's a good idea to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a... But the only way to find out is by doing it. But most good ideas, you really do feel like you want to do it, you know, or there's an urge to do
Chris
that.
Chris Kattan from Saturday Night Live, from movie fame, from TV fame, is our guest. He's appearing out at Sanford's and Sons tonight and tomorrow night. You can get tickets by calling 913-400-7500. That's tonight and Saturday night out at the Legends, Sanford and Sons Comedy Club. You know, you and Will Ferrell also teamed up for the film Night at the Roxbury. Chris, this was based off the characters developed for SNL, Doug and Steve Buttabi. Am I saying that right?
Yes.
You play Doug, Will plays Steve. Let's listen to a clip from that film.
Back off, chicklet.
What is your problem, Doug?
Emily, I don't know if you know this, but my brother and I, we live life in the fast lane, and that means no stop signs, no red lights, and there is no pulling over to take pictures. Now, you see this man over here?
What's up?
He's my co-pilot on this magic carpet ride. It's carry-on only, and you're just way too much luggage.
Shut up, Doug.
You know, these guys were huge hits on SNL, but the film was sort of mixed at the box office. What's your theory as to why that was the case?
Well, the characters never spoke on SNL.
Yeah, that's right. it was all the music and the opening to the show.
Well,
today.
It was 3 minutes, and we said score, and we went, hey, you do, you don't, you do. We said that.
Yeah.
And then when they wanted to do a film based on those characters, we're like, wow, we have to talk. And, you know.
Maybe so, that was too much of a transition. Yeah.
No, it was fine. But it was not a plan to make it a movie. But it was – the funny thing is that the film came out pretty good. And I mean, Will and I weren't really, like, excitedly happy about it, but we weren't disappointed. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a job, but we had a fun experience. I mean, doing films really is all about the experience. It's not about, like, how did the film come out. That's really it, how it is for us.
What do you mean?
Well, was it fun? Did you have a good time, you know? It wasn't like the point wasn't to make a franchise out of it.
Yeah.
In fact, like Lauren did ask me and Will about doing a Roxbury 2, and at the time we said no.
Huh. So just didn't feel right.
Yeah, maybe it will be later. I don't know, but yeah. I mean, there's just it's like Krista Wiig says she didn't want to do Bridesmaids 2, even though everyone in the world would probably want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
But she knows that she probably wouldn't. She respects herself, and she knows that she's not in it for that. And, you know, as a performer and a writer and a creator, you can put all that stuff, and it doesn't have to be the same idea.
Yeah.
You could put the same amount of energy into something else completely different, and it'll be just as good.
You know, to what extent were the Batabi brothers, you know, sort of based on the idea back in the 70s, Steve Martin and Dan Aykroyd doing Wild and Crazy Guys, which when I was in college, that was like the most greatest thing in the world.
Yeah, me too. I love that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Was there a connection there?
No, didn't think about that, but it felt like that was our characters were like for the next generation.
Yeah.
I think they were, the connection was that they kind of were those people for the next generation in the real world, not in comedy. Like when we went to a club probably in the late 70s, we might see those kind of people that Steve and Dan did.
Yeah.
And if we went to the clubs in the 90s, we might see those kind of characters that Will and I did.
Well, was that your idea to do the
brothers?
Now
we see the D-I-C-K in a box, guys, basically.
Was that your idea to do the brothers or Will's or whose?
I don't know. I don't know.
Who knows?
Probably, I don't know. I don't know which one. I think we weren't brothers at first. It was during the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Again, Chris Kattan is our guest here from Saturday Night Live fame. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888. Our email address, uptodate@kcur.org. You can also tweet us @kcuruptodate. Chris, how do you get picked to be on Saturday Night Live?
Well, you need to be at some sort of an outlet, some sort of a place where you can be seen. What helps is if you're involved in a group of some sort, a comedy group.
The Groundlings in LA.
Groundlings is where I
case.
Was at, yeah.
Second City in Chicago,
Second
yeah.
City in Chicago. Now there's like, there's a ASCAT, there's Upright Citizens, UCB, Upright Citizens Brigade, which is Amy Poehler and Matt Bester's company. I think there's some other ones, maybe Improv Olympics. I don't know. I think there's quite a few now. And, I don't know if they're all groups, so you can eventually move on from that. I don't know if there's too many other ones, but I know they're very hard to get in now because there's a lot of competition out there. But
harder now than it was 20 years ago?
Probably, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there's more groups, I would say, you know. And I think it's probably the same with stand-up too. I didn't start as a stand-up person at all.
You've just been doing it for the last couple of years.
Yeah, but I did all improv and writing and sketch and stuff. But I was really good with the crowds and people, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a lot to do with the stand-up. Yeah.
Interacting and sort of connecting in a way.
Yeah.
You know, just while you're sitting here in our studio, Aaron Branch and my son Nick, two of your big fans, are sitting right here with us, hanging on every
word. Oh, is that
your
son?
That's my son in the blue shirt. Your left there.
On the left side. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And they're hanging on every word. They want to know how to open the door and break it down to get going in this business someday.
Oh, they do?
So, yeah, sure they do.
Well,
yeah.
I think the best – that kind of that advice – I think if you know that you got something, then – I mean the hardest part to really realize is if you know you got it and you got it. If you know you got it, you got it, and then just you know it's worth trying to do something about it. And if you even think it's less than 100%, then don't.
Really?
I mean, yeah, just because it's just not going to feel the same. It's going to feel – if you have a real gift for something unique, like you're an artist at whatever it is you want to do and succeed at, then do it, you know, because you know when you know, you know. But if you have like just 99.9%, you're going to be having a lot more struggle, and you'll some of it will be a lot of lying yourself, and some of it will be a lot of just kind of faking it sometimes, yeah, and not being as good as you wish you were,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I think you should acknowledge the absolute truth in the very beginning, you know, instead of just pushing for the best place. Because what I think is happening is a lot of people are becoming very successful before they even know that they can fulfill what they've been given. You know, there's a lot of unqualified actors and performers and musicians that just find out a couple of years later that they're not doing it anymore because maybe they didn't really need to do that or could do that in the first place. Or, I mean, not to take it away, but like, you know, there's Bob Dylan and there's Jake Gyllenhaal. I don't know what that means. What does that mean? But you know what I mean? Like, it's just, you know, but also at the same time, I think no one's going to, advice for that too is no one's going to make it happen for you. No one's going to make it happen for you because it's, unless there's something in it for them, which is still not going to make it for you.
So in your case, who came across Chris Kattan to get you aboard Saturday Night Live?
Well, that was, but just real quick, I'll just say that there's this really silly quote from a U2 song that Bono says from the Octung Baby album from a song called Acrobat. And the line is, you can swallow and you can spit. You could throw it up and choke on it. But if you dream, dream out loud, because sometime your time is coming around. Oh, wait, because you know that sometime your turn is coming around, and don't let the black dogs get you down.
There you go. Yeah.
So, you know, like swallow, spit, you could do all these things and then come up with these wonderful ideas and stuff, but, you know, and people are going to tell you what they're going to tell you. And, you know, but with that dream, but dream it out loud, you know. Don't just think it. You got to do something with it.
So in your case, who grabbed you for SNL?
Well, a woman by the name of Pam. What is her last name? Pam Thomas, I believe was her name. She spotted Chris Farley at Second City, too. And she told Marcy Klein, who was an executive at SNL, and she's basically Lauren's right-hand girl or whatever. She's the main talent scout at the time.
Hmm.
Then she moved on to do 30 Rock, and she still lives in New York. But anyway, she it was during the time they were scouting for people. And you're also – there's kind of word of mouth in the comedy world of, like, who were the ones to look out for.
Yeah.
At what comedy groups. Like, and at that time, I think Will and I were doing very well at the Groundlings itself. You know, so there's, like, a word of mouth. We were, like, the partners in crime. And they're like, you should see Kattan do that monkey thing and Will do this Harry Carey. And, like, this guy's really something. We did a lot together also. So it was like we were a team. And then same thing, you know, Roxbury. We were still a team there too. So that was also helpful to be spotted. But we weren't – Will wasn't as trying to get someone to see him as much as I was. I was very, like – working on trying to get someone there to spot us, which created a lot of, like, animosity, unfortunately.
Because Will was that much against it?
Oh, no. Will wasn't against it. He just didn't need to – Will's like a kind of a feather, you know. It just happens or it doesn't happen. Like, it always worked out for him, but deservedly. He just didn't need to I'm just a type of person that needed to work harder at getting where he wanted to get because I don't know. The game for me was different. I came from Mount Baldy in Southern California and up in the cabin world. And my mom and stepdad raised me and they studied Buddhism. And my stepdad and Leonard Cohen built the Mount Baldy Zen Center. And
wow.
I was there just kind of being a kid waiting to become 19 to get out of there and get into the Groundlings, you know, just...
Was the Groundlings sort of a destination for you for a long time because of your dad's own path? Or
yeah, I wanted somewhere that I learned early on that I had something to dream and dream out loud. I learned early on that I had something to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. I almost could foreshadow what my future actually lot. I think I was so unhappy and alone a lot in these mountain areas with absolutely nothing to do, really. And that I almost saw what was going to happen in 10, 12 years. And I was just kind of like thinking, what can I do to pass the time? And I kind of thought, like, maybe I could prepare for that. Like, if I know something's going to happen in a big way, I better make sure I'm ready for it, you know. And that was like, so when I was like 12, I started taking a lot of vitamins and working out and reading books and watching good films and music and just so I could know, because I thought, like, why not? Why don't I try to be the smartest person, or why don't I try to be the, you know, because and the funny thing is, when the grounding started happening, a lot of my comedy became physical comedy because I was in good shape. I started.
You're very physical, Chris. Even finding clips sometimes going through YouTube and stuff, it's a task because so much of your humor is you got to see it to get it, you know?
Yeah, it is. It is. It was hard to show that at SNL. I had to get up out of my seat. I was one of the first, if not the first, to come up out of my seat during the read through, and people were like, why is he getting up?
You know, what's he doing? Yeah.
Because most people would look at, they would just put their heads down and look at the sketch. And just read it, basically. No one would ever look up and see somebody perform. So they thought I was kind of cheating a little bit. They thought that was kind of cheating.
You were showing off a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. And I can understand that. But there was no other way to show what I was doing. And then that, by the way, now everybody gets up now.
And does it. You set the trend.
Now I kind of set a trend.
Chris Kattan is here, the great comedian. Let's go to some phone calls here. 816-235-2888. Elizabeth from Leawood. You're on with Chris Kattan. Good morning.
Hi, I just had a question. If there was a story or any sort of thought process behind selecting that song, you know, What Is Love? Because to this day, I have a Pavlovian response. Whenever I hear it, I start laughing because I think of your sketch. And
that's why we opened the show with it, Elizabeth.
Yeah, just wondered if you still use music in your comedy or had that musical sensibility in your stand-up at all.
Oh, you know, that's nice of you to say that and notice that. I do. I think a lot of I think for a lot of people, ideas have to come from somewhere, and music is one of the biggest influences and fire starters of ideas and follow throughs. I know, like, a friend of mine, Paul Thomas Anderson, who's this great director, he was listening to a lot of Radiohead when he was writing There Will Be Blood, and he would write that with the music. It just helped him. It was like a rhythm in his head. Yeah. And
does it help you?
Yeah, that's what I was going to go back to. It does. And that's why a lot of my characters had kind of a theme song behind it. Like, the Raspberry Guys had What Is Love, and the Mango had a song called And I Miss You Like the Deserts Miss the Rain. had that song. And there was one, a Mr. Peeper sketch where I did with Katie Holmes, that every 5-10 seconds, there was a different song. That was like a teenage angst song. But unfortunately, you can't see those sketches sometimes because the copyright of the song is too much to pay for. So unfortunately, you can't see some of the sketches, unfortunately. But music, I think, is an amazing – I mean, in high school, I used to use music as my background for living. Like, if I had a crush on a girl, I would, like, just play With or Without You – by you too in my car.
And I've done that before.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
Sure, I can connect to that.
Oh, yeah. Like, you'd even get to a level of maybe almost crying if some girl broke your heart, and you just like, where's that song?
Great song.
It's
great
amazing
song.
That happened. And I mean, that would work that way, you know? It's like you're creating your own your own movie.
Wallpaper.
Living in your own movie.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that does that becomes a wallpaper for a lot of sketch ideas. And movies too, you know? That's why a lot of soundtracks. That's why I think a lot of films have screenplays that have music cues in them already. And when I write a script like that, or I always have music chosen before the scenes would be shot.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike some people who create a soundtrack way after the film has been shot.
That's interesting.
And locked. See how much money do we have in the budget? Like, well, we don't have enough. I'd be furious if I didn't have enough money for a certain song that I already thought was going to be in a scene.
Right.
Because if you watch certain movie scenes, some of them are so good, and it really is simply because the music is song
Carrying
is so
it away.
Great, and you have no idea.
Elizabeth, thank you for the call. Let's do this. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here with Chris Kattan. Again, he appears tonight and Saturday night at Sanford & Sons Comedy Club out at the Legends. For tickets, call 913-400-7500. After a break, we'll talk a little bit more about Will Ferrell and his close relationship with him, Jimmy Fallon, and others. And then later on this hour, the latest installment of 90 Mile View. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR.
Here and Now is up next on KCUR. Coming up, the U.S. is weighing options about Syria. The NFL reportedly is pressuring ESPN to drop a concussion documentary. Fukushima power plant continues to leak radioactive material into the ocean. And Qatar's Al Jazeera News Network launched an American channel this week. But will Americans watch? Just a few of the topics we're looking at on Here and Now at noon on KCUR. Support for KCUR is made possible in part by Midwest Office Technology, enabling secure content management and effective workflow solutions in the cloud and on mobile devices. Information about improving your business performance is online at motsolutions.com. And the Harriman Jewel Series, presenting performances in the Kauffman Center and the Folly Theater, including the Dance Theater of Harlem. The upcoming season listing is online at hjseries.org. It's 88 degrees in Midtown Kansas City. You're listening to KCUR 89.3 FM, online at kcur.org.
We're back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's conversation with U.S. Representatives Emanuel Cleaver and Kevin Yoder, you can find that and more information on all of our broadcasts. Just go to kcur.org. Playing cops and robbers is just part of a normal childhood, right? Monday on the show, we'll explore what's normal and what's not when it comes to preschoolers, superheroes, and gunplay. For this segment, we're visiting with Chris Kattan. He was with Saturday Night Live for a bunch of years. He's in town right now at Sanford and Sons Comedy Club. You know, you and Will Ferrell have done so much together, Chris. I gather, assuming, maybe wrong, you're great buddies. Am I right about that?
We're good buddies. We're good friends, yeah.
It works. Why does it work?
Why does it work?
Yeah, but with the two of you.
Because it has forever without any thought or effort. It's like effortless.
Yeah.
And if you see each other again, when you do, it's the same feeling. You know, you immediately joke around. We have a love for each other. It's like we giggle like little girls.
And his astronomical career success, has it changed things at all? I mean, he's just gone through the roof. You know?
Yeah, he's had some ups and downs, though. And I don't think he thinks of anything that different. Except he does when it comes to, you know, production and money and budget and those things, you know, that you have to think about.
Mm-hmm.
But what's really different for him is he's got three kids. That's a different thing.
Yeah.
You know, I have like three pickles in my fridge. That's about.
Yeah.
I don't have children. I would love some children, but you have to find the right woman for that. And I don't have the correct woman yet. So
in theory, yeah.
That mm-hmm. is that's something we don't share. So
yeah,
a lot of people my age have children and they go hang out with their friends' child soccer game practice.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you know,
it changes things a little bit.
I would hang out. I'd be the guy behind this, you know, the bleachers smoking a cigarette, looking at my phone. So
you and Jimmy Fallon are big buds too.
Yeah,
from
we're very
your
close.
Days. Yeah,
we're closer than he's just proved to be a really great guy, and he's full of love and a sweetheart, and he's done some – he had me on after my dad passed away 3 years ago, and he was like my best friend who was in one of the groundings. And Jimmy knew how much – everyone at SNL, because we know each other so well, and if we loved each other as you know, good people should do in a group, you know, and there are some really heartfelt, wonderful people like Amy or, you know, Maya or some great, great sweetheart people. And, you know, when my dad passed away, Jimmy had me on his show for the whole week. And that may have been because of my dad. I don't know what it was. I look at it. It must be something because I was like, why am I on for the whole week?
He helped you. He reached out and gave you a lift. Yeah.
But I don't know if it's help. I think he Well, he says you're the funniest guy I know on the planet, and then I don't believe him. But he says it all the time. But maybe I am. I don't know. But yeah, he did have me on his show for the whole week, and that is just a wonderful thing because no one's really demanding that. They'd probably rather see Justin Timberlake, which is what he did too. He had him, him and I. But that in his that he's that sweet of a guy who sweet. You know, he did that, and that's what he wanted, and that's what happened, and that really means something. To me, and I wasn't, you know.
So in your years when you were at SNL, people always want to know the inside stuff. I mean, was that cast, is it a close cast? Is it a competitive cast? Is it both of those things? What's that world like when you're locked in together in a way that is fairly unique to what Saturday Night Live is all about?
Well, I think our cast was definitely, we definitely respected each other, and there wasn't any, like, too much drama. There wasn't any, you know, pooping where you ate. There wasn't any backstabbing or unkindness. There was a little bit of that when I first got in. When Norm and Spade were just leaving, I felt like there was a little bit of a taste that was leaving. Not because of them, but I think their generation, that they were just the last of, was a kind of a mean kind of humor.
You and Norm
like
Macdonald
Dennis
are
Miller and, huh?
You and Norm Macdonald supposedly aren't great buds.
No, we are actually
okay?
friends. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what he was trying to do is a Fred Allen Jack Benny relationship. It didn't work though, because he really did do some mean things. But it's fine, and we're fine. But he was an interesting choice. I think he was a little pissed that when I got on the show, my first week, I got a sketch I wrote on the first sketch of the whole night of the show was a sketch I wrote, and that nobody really
had done that.
Nobody's done that before, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my first show, and nobody at the read through laughed either. But that doesn't mean they weren't unkind or encouraging. You know, Will was encouraging, and Lorne and everybody else. But somebody like Norm was a little bit like, you know, what the hell? What's he doing?
Yeah.
This guy's got
Yeah, I could just hear him.
So he wasn't very excited about that. But you look at it in the long run, he looks at it now, he's like, I was just having a good time. And, you know, most people know by now, because it was an old thing. I think it's a kind of an immature, but it is an old school thing of that comedy used to be kind of mean. And I think people know now that it doesn't work as well anymore.
That's interesting.
You know, because there was like a time when like Spade would make fun of other movie stars. And I don't think that happens anymore. Hmm. You know, he did that famous Eddie Murphy. Look, everybody, a falling star.
Yeah, that's right.
And I don't think he would do that now. I think people...
Because
people are afraid of making waves and they're afraid of losing their career. I think people are so sensitive now. And take things so personally, people are much more touchy now and much more sensitive about that, about anything. And I think that would actually affect people's careers, I think.
No, Chris, you've said that going back to the characters you play, Mr. Peepers, Mango, those guys, no matter how outlandish they are, they all have human characteristics that makes people like them. Why is that so important?
Like my characters?
Yeah, that they have human characteristics that people that make people like them. It's like a direct quote from you from some time.
Well, that wasn't conscious. I think I was told that they, you know, they were likable characters. I know that they're not angry. They're not hurting anybody. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that get hurt, and they're the ones. And what's getting hurt is usually they're like a silent comedian or you know something obvious or like a cartoon characters.
Yeah.
It's their heart that hurts or, you know, something very simple. They get rejected or, you know, their dreams aren't happening. It's something very simple and that anyone can identify with and want the best for. But that makes them happy. Like it's a sweetness about the character, I think. It's a sweetness and humanity. Humanity is very important, I think, to any character.
Because
it makes it real and relatable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's like almost 100% of believability and you know, the best characters are real. And
you know, when you made the transition from sketch comedy to stand-up a couple of years ago, how tough was that for you? Because you're making a leap at an interesting point in your life. You're in your 40s now. That's a tough age to be trying something as challenging as that, or am I wrong?
It wasn't too tough as I thought it was going to be. I know, and I only think that it was tough because there's – I wasn't really good at telling jokes. I don't know a lot of jokes. I like number one, I love communicating with people and just winging things up, like improvising with a person,
yeah,
and talking about whatever and making something out of nothing. I mean, that's some of the best ideas come from that, and I have a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah.
And I think the other person does too, regardless of who that person is,
mm-hmm.
if I know them or not, or a stranger or whatever. And I do that in the show, but part of doing that is you do that. You're doing that a few times as a performer. You're doing it when you're a character. You're doing it when you're yourself. You're doing it when you're doing stand-up. You're doing it in a scene in a movie when you know your lines. You're doing it all the time. You're communicating as a human being all the time. That's most important. And some people that are not doing it are the ones that are kind of not knowing that that level exists.
Yeah. So your stand-up is different from someone else's stand-up. How? What's your brand? What's your thing?
Well, I don't think I'm as good as some other stand-ups. I think I'm a really good performer. I think mm-hmm. I'm a good performer. I think my performance – I like to look at myself as a performer. And I think what I do and my style is different than other people. And I think – but the stand-up thing is – it's a different world because they talk – they rate you more on – you know, your jokes and your, you know, what was interesting too is when I first started was the owning of the stage was, you know, I it took me a while to realize that you're the only person up there.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you really feel like owning that stage, the better. I mean, it's like you really do feel like you might be a rock star, but you're not. But it's like but that's the closest thing to being a rock star ever will be, is the only person on stage, you know, telling jokes. But the more confidence you have and the more fun you have, the better, you know, which is this goes for any performance, but especially with stand-up.
Well, again, Chris Kattan appears tonight and Saturday night at Sanford & Sons Comedy Club. That's out at the Legends. For tickets, call 913-400-7500. And, Chris, thanks for coming.
You're welcome.
It's been fun to have you. Good luck out there, okay?
Outside of the studio?
Yeah, absolutely. You're in good hands with Craig Glazier, who's sitting right next to you.
Oh, my God. I didn't even notice he's right here.
Good luck with that, yeah.
How do you know Craig?
Just for too many years, yeah.
He must owe you a lot of money.
He does. Aaron Branch opens up for you tonight.
Yes.
You'll be there tonight, right, Aaron? You bet. Sounds good.
Yes, I will.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it. That was fun.